Hey, hi, hello, and welcome to Pop Off, the show where we take your favorite movies, music, and TV, and we rank them. I'm your host, Ethan Kaufman. Thanks for tuning in. Check out more Ithacan podcasts wherever you're listening to this, or go to theithacan.org. Screw my typical dorky segue, Wes Anderson.
Wes Anderson!
We're talking Wes Anderson today. Bro just won his first Oscar. Bro's got 11 feature films. And guess what?
I'm here.
I've seen them all. I'm going to rank them all. But!
But!
It's not just my list. We've got today's guest, Riley Friedman.
I'm back.
Riley, welcome
Woo!
Back.
I'm so excited.
First returning guest. How does it feel?
It feels really good. I've been wanting to do this one for since you started.
You got very upset when you thought I was going to do this with someone else.
I was going to do it with someone else. Desperately
wanted
it.
I
was so scared.
Yeah.
But I'm really happy we're doing it. I'm happy to be back in the booth today.
It's good to have you in my evil lair.
Oh, I love the evil lair.
Yes.
Big fan of the Kaufman lair.
When did you first get into Wes Anderson?
Ooh, okay, story time. Not until the year of our Lord 2023, last year.
Last year?
Yeah, it was.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
It was like, I think it was January. I was looking for a movie, and I was like, I've heard about this.
This guy.
Mr. Anderson fell up. I'm going to check out his stuff. I threw on The French Dispatch. And
that was your first?
My first was The French Dispatch. I threw it on, and I loved it instantly, and I was like, I'm watching everything. And now Wes Anderson is pretty definitively my favorite director. At least top three, 90% top one.
Mm-hmm.
I love the guy. I love everything he does.
Such a great dude.
He is. I love his stuff. He knows exactly how to utilize the medium of film to its full potential. And I there are plenty of filmmakers that do, but he just has a way of doing it. And, you know, he has his impersonators. There was See How They Run? Yeah. Sam Rockwell and Saoirse Ronan.
Yes,
yeah,
that.
Very
yes.
much tried to be a Wes Anderson film and failed because I don't think anyone
I think my
can
review on Letterboxd
him.
For that was just like Knives Out but Wes Anderson.
Yeah. And I don't think anyone can do Wes like Wes.
I have very fond memories of being at day camp and getting stung by a bee and crying about it and going home. And I laid on my couch eating Swedish fish and I watched Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Yeah.
And I'd seen it in theaters, which was way back when I was like 5.
Whoa.
Other than that, it took until like, what was it, 2018? Late 2018 when I was really getting into film for the first time. And I binged a lot of his stuff.
Yeah.
I think by early 2019, I think I had seen everything of his that had come out by that point.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really have a favorite director's list. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of like a loose thing, but like, he's probably top 10 for
yeah.
me.
Yeah, he
definitely.
Was the first director whose whole filmography I'd seen.
Yeah.
So.
It's 11. It's manageable.
Yeah, it's super manageable. It's
yeah.
great.
His longest is, I think, Life Aquatic, which is still under 2 hours.
Yeah.
Shall we get started?
I think we should get started.
Give me your number 11. What's
okay.
your least favorite?
I feel like we're probably going to be the same. I feel like this is most people's.
All right.
For preface, I like all of it. They're all good to
as,
great.
As do I.
Yeah. Bottle Rocket.
Bottle Rocket is also my number
yeah.
11.
Bottle Rocket is a very good movie. And for a directorial debut, it's, I think, very impressive. It's definitely like a far cry from Wes Anderson, you know?
Yeah.
There's still a little bit of that vibe. There's that scene where they're robbing the house.
Yes.
And I still feel a little bit of like, oh, this is like really, really early on Wes Anderson shots in filmography.
The montage of them when they're all like shooting the guns.
Yes,
and, like,
I love that.
I love that.
When I think there are moments where it's like this is whisperings of what Wes Anderson would be, but it's, you know, it's not very stylized. I personally wasn't super gripped by the movie. I think a lot of it hinges on you really digging the dynamic between Owen Wilson's Dignan and Luke Wilson's Anthony. And I do like them. I just didn't feel strongly enough to the point where I was like super, super invested the whole time. I thought the stuff between Anthony and Inez was cute. It's short and it's fun. I don't feel too strongly about it. It's good.
I agree with pretty much everything you said. I think what holds it back and what puts it in this last spot for me, it feels very much like a first feature.
Yes. Oh, 100%.
And there are a lot of times where, like, some of my favorite debuts do have a lot of that energy, but here, he's doing everything that we've come to know and love him for, but it is so unrefined. It's a style that he would hone and get more and more kind of maximalist with as the years go on. And it feels just like a very loose, unstructured movie. It feels like a movie, not a Wes Anderson movie.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. It's the only one in his entire filmography that I do think you could look at that and not immediately know that it's him.
By Rushmore, he locks in.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Like, debut of the Wilson brothers, they're both really good here.
Yeah, they're really good.
And just immediately like both of them, but really Owen Wilson specifically is so good at just delivering his dialogue.
He is great. And he's
so funny.
You know, he's a Wes Anderson staple, and I think it's crazy how this is their first acting.
Right. Also, just the whole being bad at crime thing.
It's
that
so
is like
funny.
A constant throughout his filmography. It's always funny.
Yes.
And I like how this maybe focuses on that even a little more than his others. Because, like, by the time you get to something like Fantastic Mr. Fox or Grand Budapest Hotel, you have that, but you also have so much else going on that it kind of gets away from just how silly it is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I love how he does it.
Yeah.
I don't think about this, though.
I'm never like, huh, I should watch Bottle Rocket again.
Yeah, if it wasn't a Wes Anderson movie and if I wasn't a completionist,
I wouldn't have watched it.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have watched it.
I'll let you go again. What's your number 10?
My number 10 might be controversial, but I think it's pretty widely held opinion, is Isle of Dogs.
This is the one we're going to fight.
Okay, this is the one we're going to fight?
Yeah.
All right.
Go for it.
I think Isle of Dogs is a very good movie. I think it is significantly better than Bottle Rocket. Unfortunately, I do have more problems with it than Bottle Rocket. I enjoyed the overall plot and characters. I think it's just weak in a few areas. I think the only character who has an arc is Bryan Cranston's chief.
Yeah.
I think he's the only one who really changes or develops or does anything. There's a lot of characters that are just there. Ed Norton dog is just there. Scarlett Johansson dog, she's in like 2 scenes, 3 minutes of screen time max. I get why he refused to subtitle the Japanese. I don't really agree with it. I do wish I could have heard what the characters said. I feel like it would have made for scenes, for more impactful scenes. Not also a fan of all the dogs and Japan are saved by the one white girl thing.
Fair.
I think, I love Greta Gerwig as a director. Don't like, and it's not her acting. It's just, I don't like that character. But other than that, it's really cute. It's really fun. Visually phenomenal. There's everyone talks about that sushi scene, you know, and it's really, really good.
Unironically, the sushi scene in Isle of Dogs is one of the best scenes put to film of the last decade plus.
I agree. I think it's fantastic. I honestly think it's a feat of
cinema.
It's
just so cool.
It is really cool.
I just love it.
It's really cool.
Yeah. I agree with a lot of your criticisms here. I think Greta Gerwig human. Don't love her.
Don't like
and
her.
It's not because of the performance. I just don't think, like, her character is not written with much. Like, she has a crush on Atari just because.
Yeah.
Doesn't really factor into it that much.
Savior.
And I do think, like, plot-wise, I do have a couple issues, especially getting to the third act.
Yeah.
That being said, this is my number 4.
Oh, whoa. Okay.
I have always loved it, and I do think it is definitely his most underrated. I think, one, just visually,
it's incredible.
So
it is incredible.
Stunning. Mm-hmm. I would still call it probably even more than Grand Budapest Hotel his best looking film. I think he takes everything about the stop motion in Fantastic Mr. Fox that worked and just upped it to an entirely new scale. I love the world building.
Yeah.
There is just so much going on at all times. Mm-hmm. Between the score and the cinematography.
Oh, it is really nice.
I have a tough time pinpointing what I love about it, but there is just an atmosphere that I think comes with, like, all of these stray dogs just kind of living on this island.
Yeah.
And also, I do think the story of Chief and him kind of being content with where he is as this stray dog, but then, like, it's very predictable how he befriends Atari and kind of becomes his protector.
Yeah.
But it just resonates with me.
Yeah, it's
I don't
cute.
Know.
It's cute.
Yeah.
I do like Atari. I do like the characters. I just think more of them could be better developed, and the plot could have had a little bit of better of a resolution than she saves everyone.
But I like there really comes down to a lot of the small quirks, I think. Like, I love how anytime someone's on TV, it's like 2D animation to differentiate it from the stop motion animation.
Yes.
I think that's
really
cool.
It is really cool.
Yeah, just the texturing with all the stop motion. It's just such a visual feast.
Because
I usually don't tune out on the plot level, and I don't hear, but this is the one where I'm less concerned with what's going on and more just how Wes Anderson as a director is pulling these like designs and colors together. I'm not going to fight you on this, really. Because like at the end of the day, it's not my favorite, and I do have issues with it, but this is one that I have held in high regard for a while. I'm now going to get into my number 10.
Do it.
Darjeeling Limited.
Okay.
Where is this for you?
That's a totally fair position to have. I'm at number 7.
Number 7.
Yeah.
This is another one similar to Bottle Rocket. I don't come back to this ever. I don't really think about it that much.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'll go down the rabbit hole of, like, just watching Wes Anderson video essays on YouTube.
Yeah.
And a lot are about him in general, but then some I watch for specific films. I've never watched a Darjeeling Limited video essay, yeah. And I know they're out there. Yeah. I just haven't watched them. All right, there we go. The combination of Owen Wilson, Adrian Brody, and Jason Schwartzman is amazing. They're so good together.
It's so good.
They are totally, like, three of the best people at just, like, reading his dialogue, who are just in line with what he as a director generally wants. Mm-hmm. And their whole dynamic, I think, also is really strong.
It's perfect.
Like, a lot of the scenes when they're on the train, just traveling, and, like, it's mm-hmm. all that banter, I love that. I just don't resonate with the story that much at all.
Yeah.
Really, all of his movies, at least to some degree, are about, like, dysfunctional families. Mm-hmm. And this is, I feel like I need more of, like, a Royal Tenenbaums-esque layout of everyone.
Yes.
And get it, like, I don't have a strong sense of everyone here.
Yeah.
The whole vibe of, like, them kind of being in this foreign country, not mm-hmm. really knowing how to navigate it, and having each other, I do think is really good.
Yep.
And kind of centers it. But really, I don't come away with that much.
Yes.
Like, the whole relationship with their mother, I don't know.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why is it higher for you?
So I have it at 7, and kind of looking back, maybe it should be a little lower, but I do really like it. Although it sits pretty neatly in the middle of my list, I think it might be his most forgettable. I just, like, looking back at all of these and trying to refresh myself, this one was the one where the least came to mind about the plot. That being said, you're absolutely right in that I'm kind of in love with Jason Schwartzman and Adrian Brody. I think they're both incredible, and they're both my favorites in Wes Anderson's repertoire of actors. Owen Wilson's great here, too. I love their dynamic. I love how they're all connected with their late father and how he influences them. I love the kind of slow revelations you get about each character, like Owen Wilson attempted suicide, and it's kind of all just throughout the film you get sprinklings of lore, and I think that works really well. I've heard that the kind of Indian backdrop is just that, a backdrop.
Like, yeah.
It doesn't really serve any purpose, which I do get. I do think it works just kind of as like a here's a new setting, but it's not bad. I do really like the color palette of the movie. I think it looks really nice. The Darjeeling Limited hinges on the relationship of the three characters.
Yeah.
And then dynamics with their late father and their mother, which is fine, and it's all good. But if you don't resonate with that, which is the same, I think, with Bottle Rocket, where if you don't resonate with the core relationships, you're not going to resonate with the movie.
Yeah.
That being said, I do really like the Darjeeling Limited. And I will say, I think Hotel Chevalier is kind of required viewing for this. I think
I need to
really
watch
well.
It.
It works really well. It gives a lot of much needed backstory to Jason Schwartzman. It's only 15 minutes. I watched it afterwards. And
is there anything in there that tops his line of "I love you too, but I'm gonna mace you in the face"?
Oh yes, there actually. Hold on, there is a really really good line. I promise I will never be your friend, no matter whatever. He says that to Natalie Portman, and it's really funny.
What's the context of that?
Natalie Portman is Jason Schwartzman's ex. And she's, like, kind of trying to manipulate him into getting back together. So he says that to her. I will die for Jason Schwartzman. So.
Yes.
Yeah.
What's your number 9?
Number 9 is the only one considered rotten on Rotten Tomatoes, but I disagree. The Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou.
Yes.
In my opinion, underrated. I know I have it at number 9, but I still think it is underrated. I'm not going to tell you it's not a little messy. I think it's kind of poorly paced. It's Wes Anderson's longest, and unfortunately, I don't think it has to be. I think it's a little too long for its own good. It has a few too many characters that you wish had more development. I think there's a lot of characters on the crew that I would have liked to see more of, but they really, you know, they focus on the main ones. They focus on Bill Murray and Owen Wilson and Cate Blanchett and Willem Dafoe.
Willem Dafoe's really funny here.
He's great. I love Willem Dafoe here. Absolutely love Willem Dafoe here. But the submarine scene, when they finally see, like, the shark they've been hunting, that's what made it a 4 out of 5 for me. That scene perfects this movie.
Yeah.
It's what makes it all worthwhile. Steve finally cracking, he sheds that stoic and, like, rarely expressive facade he has the entire time. He finally comes face to face with the thing that killed his best friend, stunned by its beauty. I completely get how the movie is divisive, because, again, the best scene is in the very end.
Right.
But it's not Anderson's weakest. I think it's really, really strong.
I agree. This is also my number 9.
Oh, hell yeah.
And I also think it's underrated. This is the one that I do want to rewatch because I didn't get a chance before this. And I do like I do have it at a 4 out of 5, but I haven't seen it in years.
Yeah.
But what I remember from it, I did really enjoy it. This is essentially Wes Anderson doing Jaws.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's really fun.
It's really fun.
It's fun, but it also like it has a lot of not depressing, like melancholic stuff, but like it feels a little existential.
Yeah.
In a way that I think a lot of his early films do. Steve Zissou is just a great protagonist, by the way. Just the look.
This is a career high for Bill Murray, I think.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Like the costuming of everyone with just like the blue ocean wear and the red beanie is so fun. His relationship with his son, played by Owen Wilson, I think is really fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
And how they're like, they're kind of estranged. They're both going after the same woman.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's weird, but it's fun. I do agree with you that I think pacing wise, like you feel the length in a way that I rarely do with movies because it is under 2 hours.
Yeah,
it's not long.
It's not long,
but it feels like it.
Yeah, it feels it.
Yeah. And so I think you lose a little bit of that general whimsical feeling that you have just because you're kind of waiting to get to the next thing. But like there are some fun set pieces, obviously the end with the shark. When they're attacked and like a whole gunfight breaks out just
the
randomly.
Pirates and stuff. Yep.
That's really
that
funny.
That part's crazy.
I mentioned Willem Dafoe, who is just like such a funny presence throughout this movie.
Mm-hmm.
The Bowie covers.
Yeah, man.
I love them so much.
What's going on? But it's so fun.
Just the acoustic Bowie covers are such a nice like back. Because we talked about backdrops, and I think like in some of his films, he uses different countries and cultures. And sometimes it works, other times it doesn't. And I feel like soundtrack-wise, he does it too a lot. And this is a very unique one, and it stands out. This is the first time he kind of sheds the... Because he's never been a grounded filmmaker, but the setting of the ocean lends itself to like a lot of stop motion, like kind of when they zoom out and you see the whole submarine as like a model set. Like, that's really cool.
Yeah, and all the like the fish... And the like shark obviously look kind of bad, but that's like the charm in it is how it's beautiful in kind of a thrown together way. You know?
Like I feel like this is really the first time he kind of broke out of what he'd been doing before and went more into like miniatures and just like production design kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
I agree.
What's your number 8?
My number 8 is this might be most controversial is Moonrise Kingdom.
All right.
I think it has a really slow start, but it is very sweet and endearing. I really do love the relationship between Sam and Susie. And Jared Gilman is on Twitter, and he's really funny.
I follow him on Letterboxd. He has some good reviews.
He's really funny. I love him. Random, they throw Bruce Willis in this one.
Yeah.
The cast is great. The cast is great. A lot of staples like Ed Norton and Bill Murray and Fred Stapleman.
Ed Norton's probably like one of my favorite supporting performances in a Wes Anderson movie here.
I love Ed Norton, and this is probably my favorite Wes Anderson performance from him. I wrote this on my Letterboxd. I think the romance between the two characters is really good, but this is one of the movies where I was like, Wes, your characters can smile sometimes, you know? Like, I get the very, like, Wes Anderson is my favorite director. I love the deadpan, typical, just staring at the camera expressions. For this one, when so much is focused on the core romance, I wish it was a little more expressive. But that being said, I do really like Moonrise Kingdom. I think the characters are really fun. It's a nice story. Another one that maybe the pacing is a little wacky, but it's pretty short. It's good. It's not my favorite, but it is a good time.
Yes. This one might... I'm not going to say it was the toughest to place.
Yeah.
I might give that to French Dispatch. Mm. But like between... I think everything between my number 3 and my number 8... It's really interchangeable.
Yes,
for
me too. I feel the same way.
Yeah, because for a while, this was one of the earlier Wes Anderson movies I'd seen. And I did just really connect with it, just like, because it's a romance, but it's not a romance, because it's Wes Anderson doing that. And it's never that straightforward when he's in control of that.
Yeah.
I kind of like how it doesn't feel that romantic.
Yeah, I get it.
Like, it's more about them as individuals than them as a couple.
Yeah,
and it's just like, it's this woodland adventure. of them trying to like gain independence and run away. Mm-hmm. It totally fails. There are a lot of parts that I just find really fun. The affair between Frances McDormand and Bruce Willis is really funny. Because it's not the
he's
done multiple like affair subplots before, but it's really funny here.
Where you have
them talking about it and then Bill Murray in the background, like getting on the little motorbike.
Yeah. And Bruce Willis in the movie, it's always just surprising when I remember, oh yeah, Bruce Willis was just in a Wes Anderson
always
movie.
Forget that.
He was just chilling there.
Yeah.
And he was like one of the leads too.
Yeah. He also did Looper this year with Ryan Johnson.
Same year?
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah, the score here I really love, like with just the full orchestration, like a lot of woodwind instruments, I think really bolsters that atmosphere. Like all the Boy Scout stuff.
Mm-hmm.
This is cool.
It's really nice.
Because it's like Wes Anderson writing dialogue for these sorts of characters who like have a very strong code. And they're like, they have like this clear objective of like, we're gonna get him back. the fight scene.
Oh my God.
Is really, like when he goes handheld. Because when he goes handheld.
Yeah.
It goes crazy. Because he never does. All of a sudden, like when he takes the camera off the tripod, you're like, what is he doing? Oh my God.
Also, Wes's penchant for killing animals a lot of the time. With a dog arrow inside of it. It's really funny. I mean, it's, you know. But it's funny.
Yeah. I think this was very clearly an early favorite of mine. Just as I've watched a lot more movies and I've come to, I think, have a stronger sense of what my tastes are, it's faltered a little bit.
Yeah.
But I still really enjoy it. Like you mentioned, it's an hour and a half. It's so breezy.
It is.
And it's just a very easy watch. The scene of them dancing on the beach.
Oh, it's good.
So fun.
It's real nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. So next one,
what's next on your
list? Number six.
Yeah.
This is one. So that stretch of like Life Aquatic, Moonrise Kingdom, Darjeeling Limited, I like all of those movies. They're the ones I probably have the least opinions on. So now we're getting to movies that I feel pretty strongly about. And the next one is Asteroid City.
Asteroid City.
I this is a controversial movie, I feel like. But I love Asteroid City. So much fun. Is it weird? Yeah. Do I understand the scene with Willem Dafoe and they're all chanting whatever the phrase is?
What is it? It's like, you can't wake up if you don't fall asleep.
Yes, yes, yes. I don't know exactly what's going on, but I think it's a movie that can be interpreted by a lot of different people. I interpreted it as kind of a rumination on existentialism and kind of... Why do we do what we do? I think it's great. I love Jason Schwartzman. I've said that before.
You've said that many times already.
But he hasn't really gotten to be the forefront of a movie since Rushmore.
No, yeah.
And I love him here. I love him here. I love the new... You know how Wes did that thing in Grand Budapest where, like, Tony Revolori... The kid feels like the Tony Revolori character in Grand Budapest. I like when Wes highlights kind of not... very well-known actors. The colors, I love the color scenes. I also love the black and white scenes. I think they look really, really nice. Oh, there's so many good parts. I love Jeffrey Wright's monologue.
I think his speech.
Genuinely one of my favorite Wes Anderson performances is Jeffrey Wright in this movie.
Yeah.
But I also love the very few scenes, short scene with Adrian Brody when Jason Schwartzman leaves and goes back and speaks to him. I love that scene.
The Margot Robbie scene.
And that's where I was going to go. Hey, maybe my favorite Margot Robbie performance of 2023. I love her in this movie. I think that scene
You've been waiting to talk about this ever since you put Barbie at number 8 on the Best Picture ranking.
I've been wanting to talk about this for so long because Margot Robbie is fantastic and I think she's great in this for her 5-ish minutes of screen time. Not even. She's fantastic. I love that scene. That, honestly, maybe one of the best scenes of 2023. I love the alien. I think he looks so funny. I love the Roadrunner.
Seeing the alien scene for the first time in a packed theater was
amazing. It's incredible. It's incredible. The whole movie is, I love Bryan Cranston. I love Tom Hanks in this. Steve Carell shows up. He has a good time.
You could just list off every actor.
I literally could because they're all great.
Yeah.
Honestly, like, I know this year had a lot of big ensembles with Barbie and Oppenheimer, but this is my favorite ensemble of... I mean, Wes Anderson always has fantastic ensembles, but this is the best one.
The fact that you are able to forget, like, because the trailer came out and, like, Margot Robbie wasn't in it, Willem Dafoe wasn't in it, but their names are in it, and it's like, you have these people in your movie and you're not showing
them?
What's
going on? Yeah. Liev Schreiber's in it.
Yeah. Yep.
Great movie. I know a lot of people who didn't really vibe with this one, and I get it. But honestly, I kind of feel bad for them because I think it's so fun.
I agree. Asteroid City is my number 5.
Ooh.
And it is baffling to me that, like, on if I go on Letterboxd and I sort my list by average rating, and it's second to last.
Oh, my God.
And it stuns me because it's so much fun.
It's so much
fun. It's so meta. Just what he is doing with, like, the movie. What is it? It's, like, a TV broadcast of a documentary about a play.
But
most of it, we're just seeing the play. And so it's, like, 3-4 different layers. I love just everything it has to say about the creative process.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the black and white scenes are, like, the people behind the play Asteroid City talking about it. You have, like, multiple actors in the play, when they are in the play, questioning why they are doing what they are doing.
Also,
like, the whole, like, why does Augie burn his hand on the, on the griddle?
Yeah, exactly. And the fact that they're playing two different characters. Like, Jason Schwartzman is playing Augie, but he's also playing Augie's actor.
Yeah.
And I think that's really cool.
Yeah. It's just, like, he straight up leaves during the climax of the movie.
It's my favorite part.
Because he doesn't understand what's happening.
Yeah.
And just, like, goes off set. Yeah. It's so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, the production design is insane. How that did not get nominated. Like, the whole little, like, carnival-esque setup they have.
But Napoleon was.
Napoleon.
Napoleon.
I don't know.
Oh, you'll rue the day.
Yeah. The way this balances the ensemble is crazy because when I think of Wes Anderson ensembles, there are three that come up, and it's this, it's French Dispatch, and it's Grand Budapest Hotel.
Yeah.
Grand Budapest Hotel has a huge ensemble, but really, it just has, like, a few core characters.
It's the three. Yeah.
Yeah. And then French Dispatch is the other end of that, where it's an anthology, and you're not with anyone for an extended period of time. And this is, I think, the best balance of that, where you have some core characters, but for the most part, you're just kind of jumping around vignette style to just a lot of small interactions.
Yeah.
Like you mentioned, Jeffrey Wright is amazing here.
So good.
Tom Hanks filling in for Bill Murray, quite honestly, is still really, really good.
He absolutely is.
Yeah, more Tom Hanks and Wes Anderson, please.
Also, Scarlett Johansson getting a real role.
Yeah.
After, like, Isle of Dogs, where she barely spoke, they actually, like, gave her stuff to do, and she's great in it.
This feels like her first, like, really notable role since, like, Black Widow, I feel like.
Yeah.
And she's really good here. Like, just the scenes of her and Jason Schwartzman going back and forth, like, through the windows are amazing.
Yeah,
obviously, the alien, there's so much that I'm going to forget to talk about, but, like, this is... such a grab bag of ideas.
Yeah.
And I was obsessed with it for, like, weeks after I saw it because it's so dense.
It is.
There's just a lot to dissect.
There's a lot.
There's
a lot to unpack. And it's fun to
unpack. There's a whole meditation on grief with, like, Jason Schwartzman and his kids.
Yes, which is really good. I'm an atheist, so I don't – it's really funny. It's really funny.
Like, the way that he stresses over telling them.
Yep. Yeah, and then they don't know that their mother has been dead for weeks. It's crazy.
Yeah, all right. I am now going to backpedal a little bit, and I'm going to go on to my number 8, French Dispatch.
Oh.
Where's French Dispatch? Oh, no. Oh,
French
no.
Dispatch is my number 5.
Okay.
So not that different, but I
thought I took your number 1 from you or something with that reaction.
No, sorry. I know this movie's really controversial.
It is.
And I just don't get it.
I said it before. This was the hardest one for me to place.
Okay.
When I saw it in theaters for the first time, I didn't love it. And if I were to rank it now based on where that opinion was against where my opinions with everything else are at now, it might be my least favorite.
Okay.
But then I rewatched it. I forget how long ago, but I gave it a second watch. And I loved it.
Yeah.
And it completely connected with me in a way it hadn't before. The thing that keeps it this low on the list is it being an anthology.
Sure.
Which is rough, and I know that's the reason that a lot of people love it.
Yeah.
It's not even the fact that it is an anthology, because when you have an ensemble this big, I don't need to get into every character. Mm-hmm. Like, everyone is giving a great performance. Everyone's really interesting, and so I don't mind, like, leaving Benicio del Toro 40 minutes in. The problem for me is the way that it's structured, where one, I think the heart of the movie is the actual newspaper publication.
Yeah.
And Bill Murray's character, who we don't really see at all ever.
Right.
And I would have just maybe liked a little more time, like, in the newsroom, getting a sense of that dynamic. Because there's like the scene by the end where they're all in there that I love. There's like the little opening montage thing of like Owen Wilson on his little bicycle.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where they're just going through the town and like talking about the publication, which I find so interesting. And like you do get a sense of who this publisher was through the stories that are in this issue, which I find cool, like just seeing how they come together.
Yeah.
But really the thing for me, the first story is better than the second story, and the second story is better than the third story.
Okay.
And so throughout the course of the film, it just feels like it's getting progressively a little less interesting as it goes on.
I see that.
And it's like it was definitely tough the first time not knowing where it's going, but even the second time, it's like Benicio del Toro as this prisoner but who's also this genius painter.
Yes.
And that whole story I find so compelling.
Yeah.
Just the way that they do it. And then Timothy Chalamet.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, why is he here?
Timothy Chalamet.
Not complaining, but why is he here?
Playing chess, but he's also a revolutionary.
And he's also sleeping with Frances McDormand.
Yeah, that too. that's really funny. And then even the third story I do really like.
Yeah,
like Jeffrey Wright is this like...
Love Jeffrey Wright.
I love Jeffrey Wright and everything. Yeah. And like the whole animated chase sequence.
I love it. I was
going to
mention that.
So cool.
Because I love it. I love when movies switch style and switch medium at some point. And
yeah.
I love the way this does it. I think it's really, really fun.
Yeah. I think overall The French Dispatch is a really effective kind of celebration of storytelling in a way very different from Asteroid City. Asteroid City is much more about the creative process itself and how the stories come to be, whereas French Dispatch is just kind of the plot of them.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, you talk about it.
So, again, this was the first one. First Wes Anderson film I'd seen, and I feel like a lot of people say it's good. It wouldn't make anyone who doesn't like Wes, and I disagree because that's what happened to me. The French Dispatch is a cinematic amusement park.
Totally.
It's constantly pulling out the stops, constantly going from black and white to beautiful color, back to black and white, to animation. It's incredible. It's what I mean when I think it's this movie and then Asteroid City and the Roald Dahl shorts, I think, really show just how well Wes Anderson capitalizes on the medium. The colors, the framing, the shot composition, it's all incredible. I understand all the criticism levied towards it. It's a movie that kind of moves at breakneck pace. Like,
totally.
If you're not paying, if you like look down at your phone and then you look back up, you're not going to know what's
going
on.
Like, they do the side-by-sides at the beginning,
yes.
And it's like you literally have to choose one or the other and then like pick
exactly.
the other on the rewatch.
Yep, yep. If you stop paying attention for a second, you're going to miss something crucial.
Yeah.
I get you don't really have time to connect to the characters, but I never felt like that was necessary. I don't know. I didn't feel like I didn't get enough time with any particular character. I felt like I got just enough time and I was ready to move on. Maybe it's because I kind of did prep myself beforehand into knowing that this was an anthology and knowing that I was going to get different stories. But by the time everything ended, I was like, okay, that was really good. I wouldn't mind seeing more, but I'm ready to move on. I'm ready to move on, and I love it. I also disagree. I feel like there are people who say there's not an overarching theme, that it's thematically disjointed. And to that, I disagree as well, because, yeah, I mean, that is true, but I think that's the point, because when you're reading a newspaper, the stories don't have an overarching theme. You
that's
know?
True.
It's just
yeah.
telling you what's going on. And so in that, I think it really captures and demonstrates a genuine love of journalism.
Yes.
Storytelling, yes, also journalism. I loved this. I loved Benicio del Toro. I really liked Timothée Chalamet, Tilda Swinton, Adrian Brody.
Yes.
Adrian Brody.
Who's playing a total scumbag.
because he always is. That's his character in
Grand Budapest
too. Jeffrey Wright. Love Jeffrey Wright's bit. I get how maybe there's a decline in the quality of the stories, but I disagree. I had just as much fun with each one as I did the other. I love The French Dispatch. I think it's a cinematic feat, possibly more so than kind of any of his other films.
Yeah. You're making me really want to rewatch
it. We should watch it.
Totally. No, I considered putting it in my top five.
I genuinely
mean it. Like, half of my list is completely interchangeable.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right, I'm going to get into my number 7.
Okay.
Rushmore. Where's Rushmore on your
Rushmore
list?
Rushmore is my number four.
All right. So we have the same top three.
Yes, we do have the same top three.
Order to be determined. Order to be determined,
but we do have the same top three.
This is the one that, hi, Dad, you're going to kill me because you love this, and this is like your favorite thing in the world.
I love you, Mr. Kaufman.
Yeah, Rushmore, you already said this. This is when he becomes Wes Anderson.
Yeah, 100%.
And you can, like, just from the opening scene, you can tell Jason Schwartzman's acting debut. Kills it, murders it.
Oh my God.
Maybe my favorite casting in any Wes Anderson movie.
Yeah. Also, this was like the start of the Bill Murray Renaissance.
Yeah.
You know, where they like brought him back and he was doing real
but
roles.
But like Max Fisher, icon.
He is.
The opening little montage of all of the clubs that he's in.
I love it so much. I love it so much. It's so funny and it's so Wes Anderson.
Yeah. This was one of the two movies that I rewatched just this week for this episode. And I didn't remember it at all. It feels really chill.
Yeah.
Kind of for a lot of it.
For most of it.
Like until you obviously get to the revenge plot with the bees in the hotel room.
Yeah.
Which is hilarious.
Smashing the bike and stuff.
Yeah. But it's really fascinating seeing the dynamics of a child going after this like adult 55. Woman.
And then beefing with a 55-year-old man.
Yeah. the scene where he like comes into her room pretending to have like been in a bike crash.
Yeah.
And like puts the music on when she's in the bed.
Sexually assaults her.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's what holds it back, if I were to say anything. I also think it moves at a much more leisurely pace.
Yeah.
To where, like, especially French Dispatch, it goes a mile a minute.
Yeah.
And this is totally the opposite of that.
Sure.
Where, like, there are some down moments. And I'm not going to say it's bad pacing because I don't think it is. I just think, like, really, like, around the maybe halfway or two-thirds more, I think, like, after he gets kicked out of Rushmore, there's a bit of a lull.
Mm.
And I'm not going to call it boring. That's not what it is. But I do think, like, his dialogue is so witty and his cinematography is always incredibly inventive. And so story-wise, when it's juxtaposed with that, I don't love it. But still, like, you have a lot of those really great moments. Max Fisher's a terrible person.
He is. I have in my Letterboxd
so
review.
So awful.
Then Max Fisher becomes bad.
Yeah, he does.
He sucks.
He totally sucks. But, hey, he wrote a hit play. So.
Yeah, he did.
And also just the play.
I love it.
Like, really, at
oh
the
my
end,
God,
it's so
I
funny.
Love it. It's so funny. As a theater kid, I really, really enjoyed this. I loved, again, it's very Wes Anderson-y, but I loved, like, the curtain opening on the different parts of the movie.
Yeah.
I agree with you that there is a lull in the film. I just actually liked it.
Okay.
I was 40 minutes into watching this, and I was like, wow, what a cute movie with a really nice ending. And then I, like, looked, and there were 50 minutes left, and I was like, oh, I can't wait to spend more time with these characters. And then Max becomes bad. He, like, sucks now. I do really love the movie. I love the way the characters grow and change. It's done really well. It feels really personal. Like you said, Jason Schwartzman is incredible. Bill Murray's Renaissance starts here. He's incredible as Herman Bloom. And Olivia Williams, who I'd never really seen anything before or since, is also really, really good.
Her performance stood out to me a lot on rewatch.
Yeah, and Logan Roy's here too. Max is a character who you do want to see win, I think, but by the nature of his goal, he can't, and you know he can't.
Yeah.
And then also he does not good things like sexually assault her.
Damn.
And he just becomes more and more desperate until he hits rock bottom when he does try to force himself onto Rosemary. I do think he does, in a way, redeem himself by the end. He's still very clearly flawed and doesn't make up for what he did, but he does clearly grow and kind of have a little bit of a redemption arc by the end of the movie. The movie doesn't try to make you forget the bad stuff that he did or try to excuse it. It just shows that he's grown from it. And yeah, this is kind of the trend of Wes Anderson kind of focusing on younger actors. He does it here with Jason Schwartzman, Tony Revolori, Jake Ryan, and Asteroid City. I do really like when he highlights unknown actors as like the leading kid.
Yeah.
I love Rushmore. I was kind of not expecting anything from it because I had just seen Bottle Rocket and I was like, okay, that didn't feel very Wes Anderson-y. I'm not sure if Rushmore will either. And I still think he really gets into Wes Anderson by Royal Tenenbaums.
Yeah.
But this one is like that halfway point where I think it really, really works.
I agree.
Love the movie.
Yeah. You also, this is up there with Ralph Fiennes running away from Ed Norton as the best abruptly running away from a character in a Wes Anderson movie when Bill Murray just...
Yeah. Oh, my God.
That scene is so funny.
It's so funny.
Yeah.
All right.
We've got the same top three.
We do.
But are they in the same order?
I don't know.
What is your number three?
My number three is Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Okay.
Okay. Not yours.
My number one.
Okay. That's totally fine.
Yeah.
Fantastic Mr. Fox is incredible. Imagine being like responsible for this movie. Like imagine knowing that you had a hand in its creation. I think I would like pass away. The writing is so tight and witty, but it's also really, really heartfelt. The pacing is perfect. It knows exactly when to be quick and snappy and George Clooney, but also when to kind of take it slower and ease more into like character growth and development. It's honestly a perfect movie. Like, yeah, I have it at number three, but I think it definitely is of the same quality, if not maybe even higher than the other two. It's incredible. The color palette is great. It's beautiful. Man, who knew orange could look so good?
Such great fall vibes.
Yes.
Because it's like a really a full spectrum of orange.
It is.
And then complemented by like some lighter yellows and like dustier browns. The stop motion with that is so good.
The score is great.
Oh my God.
The score is great. I want to drink the apple cider so badly. I love all the characters.
It's Willem Dafoe Rat's dying wish to just, like, get some of it. Because it's so good.
I love Jason Schwartzman. I love...
How many times have you said that today?
A billion. I love... Is it Wes Anderson's brother plays Christofferson?
Eric Chase Anderson.
Yeah. He's great. For like a guy who's not really an actor, I think Christofferson is such a fun character.
He's just so good at everything.
I love the dynamic with Ash and with Mr. Fox and with Christofferson. I think it's really, really cool. And man, Ash sucks a little bit, but you feel for him being kind of inferior and his dad clearly favoring Christofferson. George Clooney and Meryl Streep kind of out of nowhere because they'll never show up again.
Yeah.
They never showed up before. But they deliver. They're incredible. Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Some of my favorite voice performances ever. Like, specifically George Clooney.
Probably. Honestly, George Clooney might be in, like, top five
probably
ever.
Is for me.
Fantastic Mr. Fox is a perfect movie. Like, I don't say that lightly. I do think it is perfect.
Yeah.
The Willem Dafoe fight scene. Also
With the lightning.
With the lightning when he has his little pocket knife and then he gets zapped and electrocuted until he dies.
Yeah.
Crazy stuff.
Yeah. Fantastic Mr. Fox is my favorite Wes Anderson movie and is probably in my top 20 movies of all time, I would say. Given that he's like Wes Anderson as a director is only maybe in my top 10, I do think is saying something. It's like easily one of my favorite animated movies ever. It's just perfect. I really don't have any problems with it. What makes it number one for me, because my top three are a very strong top three, and my top two specifically are very close, but what puts this over the edge is Mr. Fox and his arc.
Yeah.
And I think he is easily the best Wes Anderson character. Because it's not that it's such a unique arc and it's nothing we haven't seen before. It's like, it reminds me very much of The Incredibles.
Yeah.
Of like a father who's past the prime of his life, has sort of settled down with a wife, with kids, wants to relive his glory days.
Yeah.
And goes out and tries to make it happen. And in the process, kind of winds up destroying his whole family.
Yes. And well, the whole city.
And here too. And I like the way that all of the other animals, like their homes get totally uprooted by the farmers and they all hate him because
they
of
hate
it.
Him.
And he's like trying to be like this smooth talking guy when he gives a toast and everyone is just like there in the sewer around the table knowing that it's his fault that this has happened.
Yeah.
But what really sets it apart from different films that have done that is the wolf scene.
Oh,
which
God.
Which is easily my favorite Wes Anderson scene.
When he sees it.
Canis lupus. Vulpus, vulpus.
Oh, it's so good. Because
Wes Anderson has gone on record and saying, like, that is the reason why he wanted to make this movie, is that scene. Because the whole thing, multiple times you have Mr. Fox and Kylie running around, and Kylie's like, yeah, there was this one time with this wolf, and he just stops, and he's like, what? Wolf, wolf, wolf. And he has, like, this huge phobia of wolves, and it's kind of out of nowhere and feels very random. Yeah,
they really don't talk about it much.
Not at all. That. And then you get to that scene where he just, in the distance, sees this wolf, and they just have an understanding.
Yep.
This whole time, he doesn't want to accept the fact that he is a wild animal.
Yeah.
And he finally does, and it is so cathartic. And it's like, because it's him really admitting defeat, but it doesn't feel like it. And I think especially in what's really like a family movie, it feels so refreshing to have that. And then obviously, just like you mentioned, the animation is stunning. The color palette is so distinct. This is like everyone's number one fall movie.
Oh, 100%.
On like all of those lists on Letterboxd. The score, the soundtrack, everything, voice performances across the board. It's so short.
Really short.
It's so short.
Like, it doesn't even crack 90,
if you include credits, it's still less than an hour and a half.
Yeah.
It flies by. The screenplay is so witty. I quote it constantly. The way that they do all of the heist scenes, and they're all like very different. Like the one at I think it's Bunt's Farm, where you just see them on the monitors.
Yes,
it's so cool.
It's never boring. It never feels like they're repeating things or anything.
Yeah,
and
like you have
an
amazing year for animation.
Amazing year for animation.
You have this. You have Up. You have Coraline.
Like, I can't be upset that I can be upset about that. it should have been this by a mile.
Totally.
Up's good. Should have been this by
Yeah, but like just even like the distinct little visual bits of like the stars on the eyes.
Yes.
Is so fun.
When the what is he, a possum?
Yeah.
When he gets the little swirlies on his eyes when he zones out. It's so funny.
And just like when they're at the farm and they're like trying to kill the chicken and he's like, I can't do it. I don't have the teeth for it. It's like it's
I would like to, and Adrian Brody plays Field Mouse, and he says one line, and it's really funny because he's just a really tiny mouse.
Yeah.
I love this movie. I want to live with this movie. I want to.
This,
eat,
by the way, is the only
movie
that is able to end with a dance party.
And it works.
the only time I will ever allow that.
In an abandoned grocery store, and it works so well.
Yeah. I love this movie so much.
Yeah.
Should I go on to my number three now?
Yeah, do your number
three. I guess. Royal Tenenbaums.
Okay.
Where is it?
Royal Tenenbaums is my number one.
Okay, all right.
The Royal Tenenbaums, and I said this about Fantastic Mr. Fox, and I'll probably say this about Grand Budapest, but I feel it the most about the Royal Tenenbaums, is it is a perfect movie.
Yeah.
It is perfectly casted. It is perfectly acted. It is perfectly written, and it is perfectly paced. I did not watch the whole movie recently, but I did watch the first 15 minutes last night.
Yes.
And the way they set everything up, it is another one that's like breakneck pace. Right. Like they're right off the bat, boom, 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 boom. Here's every single character. Here's what they were like when they were kids. Here's what they're like now. It's crazy. It's beautiful. It is a beautiful movie. Oh, when Ben Stiller says it's been a rough year, Dad,
oh
at the end
God.
Of the movie, that breaks me. I watched this a bit later into the movies I was watching. So I had gotten used to like the Anderson joviality that kind of comes with French Dispatch and Grand Budapest. They're a lot more fun. They're a lot more silly and whimsical. So when like... The bathroom scene when Richie attempts suicide is crazy. Caught me so off guard. But it is for the better. There's a ton of heart here. It's really, really good. Dynamics between the characters. You know, it's definitely unsettling, the relationship between Margot and Richie. But it all feels still grounded. You know, as crazy and as out there as it is, they kill another dog at the end. you know, all of the characters as characters feel so wacky. Like Chaz and Margot and Richie and Eli. They're all really strange, yet they all have this sense of realness. And I remember watching it and being like, why does it feel so familiar? And it's because it's Arrested Development. It's very similar to it's just a better Arrested Development, I think. This is when Wes Anderson gets that signature style. And there is no actor that gives a poor performance. It's all incredible. And, you know, there's some that we won't see again. You know, Ben Stiller, Gwyneth Paltrow, Gene Hackman, they don't return again, but they deliver some of the best performances
totally.
They've ever given.
Yeah.
I would say this is Ben Stiller's like best performance he's ever given, Gwyneth Paltrow. They're phenomenal. And I know Gene Hackman was really, really rough to work with. I don't care. He delivers an incredible performance.
I think it's almost in line with his character.
Yes, it is. Angelica Houston's great. Danny Glover's great. It's just the perfect representation of what happens when you kind of label kids as geniuses, label kids as like child prodigies, as like gifted. What happens then? What the effects of growing up in a very rich household? All these really, really strange, really, really weird family dynamics. It's perfect. It's all perfectly encapsulated in barely 2 hours. The movie blew me away the first time I saw it. The ensemble is not Wes's biggest. It's pretty medium-sized, and I think it's perfect. I think each and every character gets the exact amount of screen time they need, and I haven't even mentioned Raleigh St. Clair. He's so funny. The kid he's working with,
yeah.
Trying to like discover the new illness. Oh, it's so good. Royal Tenenbaums is a perfect movie. It automatically hit my top four when I watched it.
Mm-hmm.
Wes Anderson has three perfect movies, and this is the perfectest, I think.
Yeah, I desperately needed to rewatch mm-hmm. this. I had not seen it since 2019.
Oh, man.
And it was definitely not going to crack my top five just based on my memory
yeah,
of it.
Right.
And I threw it on because I was like, yeah, this is going to be top five, might be top three.
Yep.
I should rewatch this. And yeah, it's
top three.
Wes Anderson's at his best when he's working with these sort of dysfunctional families.
Yeah.
And like, because he does it even when they're not related by blood. Like, you kind
yeah.
of see it in every movie.
Yeah.
But this is totally the pinnacle of that. This is the Wes Anderson version of Succession. And so,
yes,
it's so
exactly.
Fun.
I saw
yeah,
your review.
Yeah. Every, like you said, every member of this ensemble is giving just a wonderful performance.
Yeah,
their
man.
Dynamics all together, you get a very strong sense of who everyone in this family is
yeah.
very early on.
Yes.
And so you also
they
you just get to en-
tell you, what's
you just
going
get
on.
To enjoy it.
Yeah.
The scene when like all the kids are in the room for the first time with Royal. And he's just,
yeah.
like, trying to explain the situation.
Yes.
And it's, like, that wonderful shot of Luke Wilson and Gwyneth Paltrow on the couch.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just, like, so disconnected
yes.
from it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you don't even realize Ben Stiller's there, too, for, like, a solid minute or two.
Right. Pagoda. He's there, too. We can't
Pagoda.
Forget about Pagoda.
Pagoda. the scene with Royal and Etheline when he first approaches her... And is like, hi, we need to get everyone together.
Yeah.
I'm dying.
Yeah.
And she immediately gets so upset. Like, she goes from so angry at him to so upset. And then he's like, I'm not actually dying. And she's like, what? And you're trying to figure it out along
it's
with
so
her.
So funny.
Of like, what is
yeah,
actually
exactly.
happening? And it is, I talked about this earlier, a lot of his early movies get very existential, but in a way
yeah.
where they're sort of offset by just his whimsical style
yes. yeah, yeah, yeah.
as a filmmaker. And this totally, between this bathroom scene and the dog, all that, I think it definitely goes the darkest.
Yes, but it is balanced perfectly.
But it's so balanced.
It's balanced perfectly.
Yeah.
And the colors are still really, really nice. There's still so many great set pieces, so many little details.
Yeah, the relationship between Richie and Margot, which
yeah.
is profoundly
crazy.
Screwed up, but is
crazy.
So interesting to watch.
All the little, there's a lot of really funny Margot lore because she doesn't tell anyone anything.
Yeah.
So that she was like married to a Jamaican musician is really funny.
I love it. It's not really title cards, because like they have the chapters.
Yes.
And they have, like, a little illustration of one of the family
yeah.
members. And then what's really fun is also you can read the first couple lines of the chapter.
Yeah.
And so it starts out with, like, Royal exits a taxi. And then the first scene is
yeah.
him getting out of a taxi. But also the books
yes.
that everyone's written. And then you, like, see, like, Richie reading Margot's book.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it's just fun little details like
yeah.
that. The costuming
and
is iconic.
Yeah.
With, like, the matching tracksuits.
Yep, the matching tracksuits, Richie's
sweatband.
And I love – I always forget when I'm talking about it that it is framed as an actual novel. But it is framed as a novel.
Yeah.
And I think that's really cool, man.
Totally agree with everything you said here. And now we can talk about our shared number
two.
Grand Budapest Hotel.
You
can take it.
Okay. So this was the I think the second Wes Anderson movie I had ever seen. And I watched it, and I remember I liked it and didn't feel much more strongly than that. And then over Christmas break in January, I watched it again. And it was always kind of my deepest, darkest secret that I only liked this movie. I didn't love it. Oh, my God. I watched it again, and it's – I can't believe I felt like this was anything other than perfect yeah. when I watched it. It's – the writing is just as tight and witty as Fantastic Mr. Fox. The comedy is at its peak, but there's a lot of really, really sweet moments. The trio of Ralph Fiennes and Tony Revolori and Saoirse Ronan – Monsieur Gustave is so good. Such a fantastic character. I love F. Murray Abraham as Old Zero. I love him just kind of talking to Jude. It's Jude Law,
it's
right?
Jude Law.
Yeah, it's Jude Law.
When they're in the, like, the bathtubs.
Yep, yep. Oh, my God, when they're in the bathtubs. Yeah. Adrian Brody, just the worst guy here, and I love it. There's that, and I know everyone
such
talks about it.
Such a slimy greaseball.
The sequence during the reading of the will.
With the
punching.
One
so
of my
funny.
Favorite
and then
scenes.
The fisheye on Willem Dafoe. Is
with the dramatic
in, with
organ
the
playing where he just, with the rings.
It's incredible. It's also like.
Willem Dafoe as Jopling
it's
is
so
the funniest
funny.
Thing.
It's one of Wes's more violent movies. I mean, violent, it's not really.
With the fingers.
But the fingers, yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So much fun.
When he throws the cat out the window.
when they go skiing down the thing. There's so many moments that I, like, genuinely, the prison escape.
Yeah.
I, like, genuinely couldn't believe that I watched this and was like, yeah, it's good. Like, it's incredible. Saoirse Ronan and Tony Revolori, like, Zero and I forget her name. Agnes, is that it?
I think.
Yeah, they're incredible. Love them. I love
Agatha.
Saoirse Ronan. Agatha. I love Saoirse Ronan. Also, something this kind of reminded me of is Wes Anderson has this thing where he doesn't really make any of his actors do accents.
No.
Almost all of them always speak in their normal dialect. And I think that's cool. And because it makes it all feel, I don't know, natural. It's great. The Grand Budapest Hotel, like, there's a reason why this is considered Wes's best and his most popular. And it's because it's just perfect. It's just comedically perfect. It's tonally perfect. It just like Fantastic Mr. Fox, it knows exactly when to be serious and when to not be. I love how it's framed. I love that the story is delivered by an old Zero, and because you're building up to it, and you know the story. It's sad when Zero reveals that he never saw Gustav H after that.
Yeah,
Agatha died pretty early on. It's sad, but it's so good. It's so well written. It's perfect. It looks beautiful. I love the purple color palette.
Yes.
Oh, it's so good. You talk now.
It's fun because, like, Wes Anderson movies, I feel like you can apply, like, the different seasons of the year to them. And, like, Fantastic Mr. Fox is so explicitly autumn with, like, all of its oranges. I feel like with Moonrise Kingdom, I get a lot of spring vibes. And this is very winter.
Yeah. And Astro City is summer.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, look at that.
Oh, my gosh.
Look at that.
Crazy. No, yeah, the purples and pinks are so vibrant.
Yes.
And I have a tough time, because I do think that Isle of Dogs is his best looking, but
sure.
I think a lot of that is owed to just the stop motion animation
and
extra things that you were able to pull
it's,
off with
yes,
that medium.
It's kind of naturally going to lend itself to looking prettier.
Yeah, and so I think that I would say, overall, I like the look of Isle of Dogs better, but the fact that this is all in live action.
Yes.
Is so crazy
to
me
because
it's such the color palette is just so fantastical.
It is.
And the production design of the hotel and really everywhere else is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
The way obviously they do the skiing scene.
It's so funny.
The giant miniature that they had for the hotel.
I love it. I love it so much.
Looks crazy. Early on, there's just that iconic shot in the elevator where it's like it's bright red and then they're all wearing purple.
Yes.
I just love the look of it.
Boy with apple. Much.
Boy with apple.
Yeah, boy with apple.
Yeah, Willem Dafoe obviously is so hilarious.
Oh, he's so funny.
He's just this evil henchman guy. At the end of the skiing scene when they're like hanging on to the side of the cliff and he like stomps down. It's so cartoonish.
It is. That's the thing. Grand Budapest, a lot of it feels like a cartoon.
Yeah.
You know?
It feels like a feature-length live-action version of the chase scene from French Dispatch.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
It does.
This might be my favorite plot in a Wes Anderson mm-hmm. movie because, like we've talked about, a lot of his later movies, there is so much being thrown at the wall every second,
yeah.
and it's a lot to pay attention to, that the story is, there's a lot less going on because it's more stylized, and mm-hmm. that's where all the chaos and density is. And then his earlier movies are much more easier to follow, and structurally,
sure.
it's just kind of, you can describe in a sentence what it's about. It's just a very stimulating plot, and it's
yeah.
like, it's like kind of a crime thriller, but also a comedy,
yeah.
but also there's some romance in there.
It juggles genres really well. It never feels like it's doing something it shouldn't be.
And
feels confused.
I think similar to you, it took me 3 viewings before I put this at 5 stars.
Yeah, yep.
And I'd always really loved it. And like from the start, like it was, I think, top 3 Wes Anderson movies for me. But it did take a while to just like, because there are so many pieces of, there's the production design, there's the plot, there's the cast, there's everything. The script is so witty.
So good. It's really good.
Yeah.
I mean, again, Wes' writing is always really good. And I think maybe it peaks at Fantastic Mr. Fox, but this is...
This is such a close second,
if not on par.
I might even call it on par,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I think it's very easy to see why this is his most critically acclaimed film.
Yeah.
It is the perfect mix of style and substance. And yeah. I think a lot of people have a problem with him as a director because they view him as style over substance. And I firmly disagree.
I agree.
I think the style is the substance.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
But
hey,
I think there's enough going on here to even offset his haters.
Yes, yes. I agree. It's incredible. I will never agree with the style over substance thing, except a little bit in the Roald Dahl shorts. But even then, they're kind of made for style specifically.
Yeah.
Everything he touches turns to gold. He is my favorite director of all time. And Grand Budapest is Royal Tenenbaums, Fantastic Mr. Fox, Grand Budapest. They all stand on this, and they all kind of represent different eras of Wes Anderson. And they're all perfect movies. They're
yeah.
all perfect films, and I love them all.
And before we wrap up, rapid fire, rank the Roald Dahl shorts.
Okay.
Number 4, The Rat Catcher.
Rat Catcher.
Number 3, The
Swan.
Number 2, Poison. You disagree with me.
I disagree with you.
Number
okay.
1, Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar. You switch those top two.
Okay, I switch those top two because I really, really like Poison. I think what he does with the shaky cam and a lot of the stuff
the
is really,
The shaky cam
really
was
cool.
crazy.
It's really cool. Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar, the stuff he does with the set is so cool. The Swan is so dark
the Swan
and
is
evil
so
and
dark.
Terrible.
Yeah,
and then The Rat Catcher is there
it's
too.
Fine.
It's fine. It's good.
Okay. And that is our Wes Anderson list. Thank you all for listening. Riley, thanks for being here again.
Thank you, Ethan. It's so fun.
This
I love
awesome.
Being here. Yes.
You've been so excited for this.
I have been wanting to do this episode for so long.
Did it live up to your expectations?
Yes, it did. I love talking about these movies.
This was fun. I had nothing to say for the first few movies, and then I, really, then I got
okay.
into
then
it.
Locked
now
in,
I'm in
and
so,
it's fine.
I locked
good,
it. It
good,
took me a while,
good.
But I locked it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right. This has been Pop Off. We'll see you all next time.
Bye,
Riley,
guys.
We won't see you. You won't be here, but it was
Mwah.
Great having you.
It was great. I hope you guys enjoy the next ones.
Say goodbye to the fans.
Goodbye, everyone. I love you.
Love you, everyone.
Bye-bye.
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 Bye-bye.